Belief has little or nothing to do with reality. Reflect on this. The realization of impermanence is paradoxically the only thing we can hold on to, perhaps our only lasting possession. It's like the sky or the earth. No matter how much everything around us may change or collapse, they endure. Whenever we lose our perspective or fall prey to laziness, reflecting on death and impermanence shakes us back into the truth. What is born will die. What has been gathered will be dispersed. What has been accumulated will be exhausted. What has been built up will collapse, and what has been high will be brought low. Isn't everything always changing? The leaves on the trees in the park, the light in your room as you listen to this, the seasons, the weather, the time of day, people passing you on the street. And what about us? The cells of our body are dying, the neurons in our brain are decaying, even the expression on our face is always changing depending on our mood. What we call our basic character is only a mind stream, nothing more. Today we feel good because things are going well. Tomorrow we feel the opposite. Where did that good feeling go? New influences took us over as circumstances changed. We are impermanent, the influences are impermanent, and there is nothing solid or lasting anywhere that we can point to. What could be more unpredictable than our thoughts and emotions? Do you have any idea what you're going to think or feel next? Our mind, in fact, is as empty, as impermanent, and as transient as a dream. Look at a thought. It comes, stays, and it goes. The past is past, the future not yet risen, and even the present thought, as we experience it, becomes the past. The only thing we really have is nowness, is now. In Tibet, there is the story of Krishagatami, a young woman who had the good fortune to live at the time of the Buddha. When her firstborn child was about a year old, it fell ill and died. Grief-stricken and clutching its little body, Krishagatami roamed the streets begging anyone she met for a medicine that could restore her child to life. Some ignored her, some laughed at her, some thought she was mad. But finally, she met a wise man who told her that the only person in the world who could perform the miracle she was looking for was the Buddha. So she went to the Buddha, laid the body of her child at his feet, and told him her story. The Buddha listened with infinite compassion, and then he said gently, "There is only one way to heal your affliction. Go down to the city and bring me back a mustard seed from any house in which there has never been a death." Krishagatami felt elated, and she set off at once for the city, and she stopped at the first house she saw, and she said, "I've been told by the Buddha to fetch a mustard seed from a house that has never known death. Many people have died in this house," she was told. So she went on to the next house. "Oh, there have been countless deaths in our family," they said, and so on to a third and a fourth house, until she had been all round the city and realized the Buddha's condition could not be fulfilled. She took the body of her child to the charnel ground and said goodbye to him for the last time, and then returned to the Buddha. "Did you bring the mustard seed?" he asked. "No," she said. "I am beginning to understand the lesson you're trying to teach me. The grief made me blind, and I thought that only I had suffered at the hands of death." "Why have you come back?" asked the Buddha. "To ask you to teach me the truth," she replied, "of what death is, what might lie behind and beyond death, and what in me, if anything, will not die." The Buddha began to teach her, "If you want to know the truth of life and death, you must reflect continually on this. There is only one law in the universe that never changes, that all things change, and that all things are impermanent. The death of your child has helped you to see now that the realm that we are in, samsara, is an ocean of unbearable suffering. There is one way, and only one way, out of samsara's ceaseless round of birth and death, which is the path to liberation. Because pain has now made you ready to learn, and your heart is opening to the truth, I will show it to you. Krishna Gotami knelt at his feet and followed the Buddha for the rest of her life. Near the end of it, it is said, she attained enlightenment. Krishna Gotami's story shows us something we can observe again and again. A close encounter with death can bring a real awakening, a transformation in our whole approach to life. Frida Naylor, a doctor who courageously kept a diary as she died of cancer, wrote, "I have had experiences which I never would have had, for which I have to thank the cancer. Humility, coming to terms with my own mortality, knowledge of my inner strength, which continually surprises me, and more things about myself which I have discovered because I've had to stop in my tracks, reassess, and proceed." If we can indeed reassess and proceed with this newfound humility and openness, and a real acceptance of our death, we will find ourselves much more receptive to spiritual instructions and spiritual practice. This receptivity could well open to us yet another marvelous possibility, that of true healing. Tibetan Buddhists believe that illnesses like cancer can be a warning, to remind us that we have been neglecting deep aspects of our being, such as our spiritual needs. If we take this warning seriously and change fundamentally the direction of our lives, there is a very real hope for healing not only our bodies, but our whole being. The purpose of reflecting on death is to make a real change in the depth of your heart. Looking into death needn't be frightening or morbid. Why not reflect on death when you are really inspired, relaxed and comfortable, lying in bed or on holiday or listening to music that particularly delights you? Why not reflect on it when you're happy, in good health, confident, full of well-being? Don't you notice that there are particular moments when you are naturally moved to introspection? Work with them gently, for these are the moments when you can go through a powerful experience and your whole world view can change quickly. Contemplation on death will bring you a deepening sense of what we call renunciation, in Tibetan, Nejung. Ne means actually or definitely, and Jung means to come out, emerge, or be born. The fruit of frequent and deep reflection on death will be that you will find yourself emerging, often with a sense of disgust from your habitual patterns. You will find yourself increasingly ready to let go of them, and in the end you will be able to free yourself from them as smoothly, the masters say, as drawing a hair from a slab of butter. This renunciation that you will come to has both sadness and joy in it. Sadness, because you realize the futility of your old ways, and joy, because of the greater vision that begins to unfold when you are able to let go of them. This is no ordinary joy. It's a joy that gives birth to a new and profound strength, a confidence, an abiding inspiration that comes from the realization that you are not condemned to your habits, and that you can indeed emerge from them, that you can change and grow more and more free. There would be no chance at all of getting to know death if it happened only once. But fortunately, life is nothing but a continuing dance of birth and death, a dance of change. So let us then work with these changes now in life. That is the real way to prepare for death. Life may be full of pain, suffering, and difficulty, but all of these are opportunities handed to us to help us move towards an emotional acceptance of death. It is only when we believe things to be permanent that we shut off the possibility of learning from change. If we shut off this possibility, we become closed and we become grasping. Grasping is the source of all our problems. Since impermanence to us spells anguish, we grasp onto things desperately, even though all things change. We are terrified of letting go, terrified, in fact, of living at all, since learning to live is learning to let go. And this is the tragedy and irony of our struggle to hold on. Not only is it impossible, but it brings us the very pain that we are seeking to avoid.